Hello and welcome to Unlocking Games, a show about social impact games and how they provide a new way to explain the things you care about. I'm Brandon Carper, a training designer.
I'm Chad Hafley. I work with user experience in academic libraries.
And we've been on somewhat of a hiatus.
Yes, not on purpose.
Not on purpose, like the previous one, which was just, I guess, a few weeks before our last hiatus.
if that one was strategic, this one was tactical. I don't know.
Huh. Well, Chad, you had a significant life event.
Yeah, there's another person in my house now. We had a baby.
I'm glad you qualified that as
yes.
a baby.
A hobo showed up, and we decided to keep him. But yes, I now have two daughters, and everything is awesome, and sleep deprived at the same time.
Yes. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I had my own significant life events, not baby related, but like taking a meat tenderizer to the face.
I like my problem better.
Yours sounds slightly more pleasant, although I'm sure your wife would disagree.
Yeah, maybe, but mine might smell worse too.
Well, let's just end this metaphor right here. So today we're actually reviewing a game that came out somewhat recently. It was planned to have been more recently than it ended up being. But we're talking about a game called We Are Chicago, which came out for PC on February 9th.
We're still within the two-month window. That's pretty timely.
We're still within the arbitrary two-month window that we have just...
Yes, that I just created in the last 6 seconds. Yep.
So I've never personally been to Chicago, although I think one of our old college friends went to med school there.
Yeah. I've been to Chicago, but largely stuck to like the convention center and central downtown area, which I'm sure is not representative of the way most people live there.
Sure. So neither of us are the we, and the we are Chicago.
no.
Unfortunately. It was set... It's a game set in a neighborhood based on Chicago's South Side, and there the residents struggle with gang violence. This game was developed by a studio called Culture Shock Games.
And their background was in, what was it, Oregon Trail?
Yes, Oregon Trail. Not the Oregon Trail, which has come up, I think, almost in every episode since our second season began.
I did not mispronounce. Oregon Trail is a zombie-themed take on the old Oregon Trail. So that's where we're coming from with this.
Yeah, so they've taken kind of a left turn in their career trajectory as a studio to make a social impact game about gang violence. Do you have any personal experiences with neighborhoods like the setting of this game, Chad?
I would make no attempt to even classify anything I've ever experienced as relevant here. I mean, when I was in grad school, I lived in a not great neighborhood, but it was nothing compared to what I understand daily life to be like on the south side of Chicago. I would make no attempts at claiming personal relevance there.
Oh, really? That apartment that you used to live at in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, like, I mean, so your questioning reaction again shows like how authentic my experience probably was.
I think my most vivid memory of that apartment, Chad, was someone tied together a pair of shoes and threw them over a telephone wire.
Yeah, it was all downhill from there.
That was the beginning of the end.
Well, admittedly, my memory is tainted by that when I went back and visited a couple years later, and like all the stores within a 3-block radius had shut down and been boarded up, so I don't really know what happened after I left.
Oh.
But, yeah.
I mean, all of the library science luminary talent had left, apparently, and then everything just got shuttered in despair.
I was single-handedly holding my neighborhood together. This is an undeniable fact, yeah.
So yeah, this game is actually based on first person interviews from people in the rough neighborhoods surrounding Chicago. The gameplay is similar to a Telltale game, so
which
like
we've talked about before, I believe.
Yeah, so like The Walking Dead or Tales from the Borderlands. Also similar to Life is Strange, which was our very first episode.
Mm-hmm. And one of our earlier episodes, we did the Mr. Robot game, which I think Telltale actually had a hand in developing.
Oh, really? I didn't know Telltale helped develop. Did you mention that? Maybe you mentioned it and I forgot.
Maybe. It was ages ago.
Seasons ago.
Or a season ago.
within the show and in the world. So the gameplay, what this means is basically the gameplay is walking around small environments with little interactivity, and then you make dialogue choices, and then you get moved to a new small environment to walk around, and so on and so forth.
And supposedly your choices of what you say will have an impact on the events later in the game.
Yeah, correct. So just like a Telltale game, occasionally you'll make a choice and there'll be some text at the bottom that says so-and-so will remember that. The game starts out very similarly to Life is Strange. To Life is Strange, no article there. You start by kind of walking down a locker-filled hallway, and you play Aaron, a teenager about to graduate high school. You have a little sister, a single mother, and a few friends who are struggling to deal with gang violence. There's some worries about being shot, and some people are considering joining a gang because they don't really see any other future for themselves.
Which I understand is a fairly faithful reproduction of the setting of what a lot of people do face in the South Side of Chicago.
Sure. But like you, I have to take the game designer's word for it.
Yeah, exactly. Same here.
Having grown up in rural Pennsylvania.
You mean that's not the same?
The apparent goal of this game, so we'll look at an interview with the founder of Culture Shock Games, Michael Block, on Polygon. He said, "I think that the empathy, expanding, and educating part of the game, in some long-shot pipe dream sort of way, will help people that are privileged and are active. People that vote." And the game begins and ends with a call to donate to youth development nonprofits, namely the All Stars Project of Chicago and Reclaim Our Kids.
Which are real organizations that exist in the real world and do good work.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the game starts and you actually see brochures for these nonprofits on the coffee table next to your college applications. So I guess we should do some full disclosure here that I was able to play the game, but Chad, you were not so much.
I was able to purchase the game. I got that far. I bought it from Steam on my MacBook because I don't have a PC that would really be capable of playing it. And I installed it successfully on the MacBook, booted it up, and I heard one line of dialogue, which I think was a newscaster talking about something about the South Side of Chicago or election, maybe. I don't remember. And then just a black screen that I stared at for 10 to 15 minutes. And then I tried it two or three times, got the exact same sequence of events. And then I asked for a refund and found a Let's Play on YouTube to watch. So that's what I'm basing my critique on.
Well, there you gave it 10 or 15 minutes before you decided that nothing more was forthcoming.
Yep. My first reaction was like, oh, is this like an artistic choice in the game? Am I starting in a dark room? Do I need to wake up my character? I don't know. No, there was no loading bar. There was just a black screen.
Waiting for We Are Chicago.
Yeah.
Waiting for Godot. There's a rhyme there. Could have been a great joke, but that's all you get. Sorry, listening audience.
No, don't apologize. Own it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what contributed to the goal of the game. I think that... So there's a mixture of familiar events with gang violence as you go through the story. So, for example, there's a rather lengthy sequence where you're setting the table and you sit down to eat dinner with your family, and something very normal that we can all relate to, and then it's interrupted by gunshots outside and the peaceful environment that was created in that setting the table and sitting down to eat gets rapidly disrupted. There's another nice moment where you're taking a test, but you only see the answers briefly, and then the answers are overwritten with things like anxieties about your future and your own safety and the fate of your friends. So when you're picking an answer, you really can't see the answer you're picking because you're so distracted by what's going on in your own head. And I thought that was an interesting artistic choice.
Me too. I actually thought that was a neat thing that I would hope to see used elsewhere in other games, although maybe it'd be seen as a ripoff at this point. But it was a way of kind of establishing an internal monologue, especially for a character who has no voice actor that you see only through text on the screen, in a way that didn't feel clunky and weird.
Yeah, we can talk more about the style of how the narrator is presented because it's kind of unique.
Yeah, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I think another scene that kind of worked well was as you're working as a cashier at a fast food restaurant, which a lot of us have experience with. I never worked at a fast food restaurant, but I certainly worked my fair share of retail jobs.
Uh-huh.
Boy, howdy. In this game, however, you're standing behind bulletproof glass and you're passing money back and forth through a slot. And then you give them their food through a transaction box that you might see at a bank, where you open up a secure container, you put it in there, you close your side, and that allows the other person to open their side and they take the food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was something I never even considered existing in a fast food kind of environment before.
Yeah, exactly. Like I have never seen that. I've never even conceived of that existing, but mm-hmm. I guess it makes sense given the environment.
Yeah.
So I found that kind of powerful as well.
Mm-hmm.
And even just walking down the sidewalk in the game, you'll see someone approaching you, and then you have to cross to the other side quickly, because that other person could be a member from a gang who wants to make trouble. So your best choice is just to avoid the trouble.
This was one place where me watching a Let's Play instead of the game was a detriment to me. So I believe the game actually gave you a choice of whether to cross the other side. Is that right?
Yeah, it does. And
so what happens if you don't cross?
Yeah, it's a good question. I never didn't cross.
Mm-hmm.
And often the choice springs up really quickly that I don't know if I actually was able to pick the choice, because it would spring up and I'd have like 1 or 2 seconds to like target the smallest part of the screen with my mouse.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wondered if the game was just auto selecting for me instead of me picking.
That's possible.
Yeah. So, interesting question. My guess would be the character you're walking with would override whatever you choose.
Oh, good point. Yeah, because you're walking with your friend, he would probably pull you across the street or something.
Yeah, exactly. In a but thou must situation.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that expression?
I've not heard the expression before, but I think I gather the general idea.
Yeah, it goes back. So it goes back to the very first Dragon Warrior game, which was for the NES.
Okay, yes, and I did play that.
Yeah. So this was, what, 1989?
Plausible, yeah.
And there's a question, and you have to save the princess, and you save the princess, and after you save her, she asks you if you love her, and you can say yes or no.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And if
yeah, I'm flashing back now. Yep.
And if you say yes, the game progresses. If you say no, she says, but thou must. And then she asks you again.
No matter how many times.
And the game does not progress until you say yes.
It was some programmer who learned how to write loops that day.
Yeah. Yeah. So ever since then, that's been kind of a shorthand expression for a false choice in a game.
I like it. I'm going to be using that.
To your new interns.
Yeah.
So this made me think of other games that have mixed relatable events into the more fantastic or more foreign game experience. Do you have any that come to your mind, Chad?
The one I could think of, did you ever play The Darkness? I believe it was an Xbox 360 game.
No.
It was based off of a comic book series that I admittedly have never read. It was a kind of a action. It was a first-person shooter action game blended with a little bit of light RPG elements. And you're a kind of a normal schmo who gains superpowers. Blah blah. Not important to this discussion. But at one point, you're sitting in your apartment with your girlfriend, and you're watching TV. You're watching a movie, and it's an actual like public domain movie of some sort that they put in the game that is playing on the TV. And you have an option to just like sit with her and watch the movie, or you could get up and go on with the game's plot. And if you just sit with her and watch the movie, there's an achievement that unlocks. That's if you sit and watch like more than 5 minutes of the movie or something like that, then there's no other way to get that otherwise, which I thought was, and it was a weird, it was weird, but it felt like a attempt to integrate domesticity into an otherwise crazy scenario that I thought was interesting.
Hmm. Was there any indication or any prompt that there would be a reward for sitting down and watching the movie?
No, if I remember right, and I'm flashing back a decade here, it's your, you automatically sit down to watch the movie, and then you get a prompt that says push A to stand up or something like that. And you just, if you just don't push A, you sit there and watch the movie for a while.
Hmm. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. I was reminded, especially in the fast food sequence of Space Quest 4, where you have to get a job at a fast food chain called Monolith Burger.
Yum.
And the M logo for Monolith Burger is shaped as you might expect.
Yeah, subtle.
But yeah, there you have to assemble hamburgers on an assembly line. It's kind of fun, I guess.
Wasn't there an old arcade game that was the central concept of it? Burger Time. Yes. Well,
yes, there's Burger Time, where there are the components of a hamburger on a series of ladders and platforms, and you're being chased by pickles and eggs.
Yep.
And you deter them by sprinkling pepper on them.
Yes, I think you're right. Yep.
One of the most powerful games for me in this respect was an RPG called Persona 4. There's actually a whole series of Persona games, but usually you play a high school student, and during the day you're going to high school and going to class and taking like these brief quizzes, and after school you have to go like hang out with your friends and choose who to spend your time with, or do you go to the gym, or do you go to the ramen restaurant? And then at night you jump into some fantastic fantasy world and fight demons.
Mm-hmm. Yep, like we all do. Yeah,
like we all do. And I always found that, you know, really, really engaging. Just because it really pulls you into the, you know, the memory of being a high schooler, and then suddenly you're doing these really outrageous things in a way that no other game has really done before.
Yeah, and if you step outside of the even games for a little bit, that was one of the main reasons I always appreciated Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think was it mixed that like relatable high school struggles with the crazy fantasy sci-fi aspects.
Oh sure, yeah, definitely. And Veronica Mars maybe too.
Yeah, yeah.
A lesser extent. It always amazed me how she could call up anyone and they would immediately give her all the personal identifying information of whoever she wanted to know about. But
she had unique talents. Yes.
Anyway, so getting back to things this game did well, there was also a nice event toward the end where you're at a poetry slam and you get up to read your poem, and the poem is actually read in the voices of different people throughout the game. It's, you know, a poem about the struggle of growing up in a neighborhood like that. And for me, that got really close to being an aesthetic success, but didn't quite cross the finish line.
What do you think kept it from crossing that line?
Well, I think you had brought this up earlier, where the choices for the first person player perspective was a little bit odd. Right. So usually in a game, if it's third person, typically the person will be more likely to have their own voice and be their own character and be narrated, or at least, you know, have their own dialogue that they say as if they're an actual character and you're just controlling them for part of the time. Or a lot of the times in a first person game, you might not have any dialogue that you say, and you might kind of just be like an everyman going through the experience. Mm-hmm. Or at least when you do say the dialogue, it'll kind of like pop out into a third person view, maybe to view you as a character. But this game made the interesting choice of having the dialogue as subtitles, but mm-hmm. it's not spoken. Everyone
yeah,
else in the game
subtitles of nothing.
What's that?
It's subtitles of nothing.
Right. So everyone else in the game speaks normally and has their own subtitles, but you just have subtitles. So you're still saying specific things. You're not the every person like in some games, but you're not actually speaking, which it. Maybe that was a concession to allowing you to insert yourself into the character, but it was just so out of the norm for these type of games that it felt really off-putting.
Mm-hmm. That poetry slam you mentioned, as they kind of got into that scene, I was like, how are they going to do this? My character has no voice. Am I just going to look at text on a screen and while, you know, people applaud me or whatever? But then they did the thing that you mentioned where have voices of other characters throughout the game, right? I was like, oh, well... Like, on one hand, yes, I think that did feel like an interesting artistic choice, but it also fit it covered up something very nicely that I thought was an oversight otherwise. So I can't quite decide if it was an artistic success or covering up a flaw.
Yeah. Yeah. We could probably go back and forth on whether, you know, constraints breed artistic success or...
It was a weird constraint more than anything else, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, just one other small thing that I did like the game handle technically was there were some interesting narrative devices, like, you know, your character obviously has a smartphone because he's a high school student in the modern day, and there were some scene transitions where, like, he would pick up the phone to look at a picture that had been taken on it, and then you would kind of zoom in on that picture, and then that picture would become the next scene that you play.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool, using, you know, bringing the phone up, and or even when the phone, you know, he brings the phone down away from his face, yeah, you're suddenly you're in the next scene. That was a nice transition effect.
But it has little to nothing to do with the impact of the actual story being told.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, that brings us to maybe what could have been better about the game. Mm-hmm. So, we talked about you weren't able to get the game working, unfortunately.
Yeah, sounds like you had a black screen experience also.
Well, when I started the game, it began playing that audio clip that I think you heard. But mm-hmm. it started playing before anything loaded, so it was that feeling you get where you have, like, a bunch of browser tabs open, and then some horrible web developer has decided to, you know, put something in there that talks at you, and you're trying to find what tab it is, and at least now with browsers, it'll put a little speaker icon on your tab so you know it's talking, and you can kill it. Anyway, that was the feeling I got. But then the game finally loaded, and the same clip played again when the main menu finally appeared. So it just seemed like it was misfiring somehow when the game booted up.
Mm-hmm. Which, if that's literally the first thing you encounter in the game, like, why was that not dealt with?
Yeah. Yeah, I've never QA'd a game, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wish those things would have been dealt with. There were some other just technical bugs. Like, sometimes dialogue would hover over the next set of options while I was trying to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I completed the game and I tried to exit, the game actually crashed, and I had to Control-Alt-Delete it. So my experience began and ended with bugs, kind of, you know, breaking my sense of immersion, unfortunately.
Well, I'm happy to report the Let's Play video I watched had no bugs.
Oh, well, they...
The video, I hit play and the video played, and I watched it. Thanks, YouTube.
Good job. I'm glad to hear that report.
But I mean, the bugs for me, I mean, on one hand, I'm like, yes, this was a small indie studio trying something big and you know, important and new. On the other hand, when I was doing research for this episode, I found evidence that the game had been in development at least back till early 2014, which means they had 3 years to do this. And I know, you know, it's a small team, they probably had other day jobs, etc. But in 3 years, I feel like you could have done a little bit more QA on basic issues like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, indie studios kind of set their own... I don't know, maybe at some point they committed to a publication date and they had to make it.
Yeah, but possible.
I don't know. So, yeah, so there were the clear bugs, but there was also a sense of just... generally, things could have been polished more, right? Mm-hmm. So there's 3D text that hovers throughout the game. Sometimes it shows you what you can click on. Sometimes it just subtitles the dialogue and it gets put. And I think the intention was to kind of put it in interesting places. So it was kind of an artistic effect instead of just plain subtitles. But it's strangely low res. And sometimes it got rendered behind objects in the foreground so that you couldn't read it. So it just kind of called attention to itself as a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the phone, and there's something about the phone.
Yeah.
That...
This one drove me crazy more than almost anything else in the game. Anytime your character looks at their phone, which is fairly often, the phone, you know, in the upper right corner, what tells you what time it is, always says Tuesday at 10:45 a.m. No matter when you look at it, even when it's clearly taking place at night, even when it's clearly been a day since the last time you looked at your phone. So unless the south side of Chicago has some really odd night-day patterns that I'm not familiar with, it pulled me out of the game. It's a very small detail, and, you know, nothing in the narrative means you have to know what time it is. It's a small detail, but it's a small detail that it adds up over time, especially since you're not just seeing it once or twice, you're seeing it repeatedly throughout the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the kind of thing where, you know, if it were me leading the team, even if we were like the last day before launch, I would have found the art asset and just like Photoshop clone stamp, you know, edit it out, you know, like,
yeah.
I'd rather have no time there at all than
exactly.
You know, it's always Tuesday at 10:45.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's other ways to handle that other than being weirdly specific and then leave it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. There were distracting grammar mistakes throughout, unfortunately. As you're walking through the neighborhood, you know, I felt like that was supposed to be maybe one of the strongest parts of the game is, you know, feeling what it was like to live in the neighborhood, but everything was strangely blurry. Like they were trying to simulate depth of field, but didn't quite get it to work.
Mm-hmm. And both the neighborhood and the school also feel very empty to me, at least in the video I watched. Like there were very few background characters. It didn't feel like a real lived-in place most of the time.
Yeah, the school wasn't as bad, maybe, but definitely the neighborhood, you just had the one person walking at you and you had to cross to the other side like it was a game of Paperboy, you know?
Yeah. That's a crossover I would play. Anyway. There's potential there.
Yeah, yeah. You had some thoughts on the cash register as well?
It was just weird. First of all, everybody pays for their bill with a $10 bill, no mm-hmm. matter what. I don't know if that's a, you know, an authentic South Side of Chicago thing that everyone pays only in $10 bills. I don't know. I don't have the experience to call that one way or the other, but it stuck out as odd to me. And there's a significant portion of the game where you are, as you mentioned, working that fast food cash register job, and you have to do math to, you know, give people their change for their order on their $10 bill. And there's just the buttons to do that, to count out the ones that you're giving them, are weird. So like you have an option to add cash, which actually takes it out of the cash drawer and adds it to the pile of what you're giving them, but that's not clearly laid out. Anyway, again, I was watching a video rather than playing it myself, so I'm not sure how much my confusion would have actually stuck through in the game, but when I saw the person who was playing in my video click on those buttons, they did not do what I expected them to do.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, and that sequence as well, like, you know, I mentioned that I enjoyed the environment, but it just got kind of tedious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like someone
part of me is like, yes, like maybe that's the point. They wanted to establish like the tedium of the jobs that the people in the South Side of Chicago do. But I don't know, there's a line between tedium for narrative point and but it still has to be a game that is engaging.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also, I mean, this kind of comes from when you're writing a short story or a novel, but I think some people call it lampshading, where
mm-hmm.
like if something weird is happening in your book or your story, you're kind of obligated to give a wink to the audience that you know it's weird, so they don't just think, you know, you're messing up, right? Like if a character yeah. does something extremely out of character for apparently no reason, you have to kind of give the audience just a clue that, okay, the author knows this is really weird and it's okay that you think it's weird. So the audience doesn't think that the author has just lost their marbles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the same thing kind of applies here where, okay, it's really boring, but I would have liked, you know, kind of a nod at least from the game developers that made me think, okay, they know this is really boring. They know this is not really fun at all, but that's kind of the point. I would have been more okay with it if that had been the case.
Mm-hmm. And I think when you view it in the context of the other issues in the game that we've talked about, it also became more likely that I would see it as an unintentional problem rather than an intentional narrative point.
Right. Yeah. So this on the back of everything else just made you and I think that it wasn't really intentional. It was just unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were some kind of disjointed aspects of the narrative as well.
Yeah. So this was, you know, more than a month ago now at this point, so I can't remember the details exactly, but at some point, Aaron, shows up at home covered in bandages, and I can't remember exactly what led to that. There was a fight of some sort, and his mom doesn't even mention the bandages.
Yeah, and he tells his sister, like, don't tell mom. Then his mom comes in,
yeah,
and mom's like, what happened? And you say, nothing, and your mom's like, oh, okay. And
yeah, exactly. Like, oh, great, carry on, you're just dressing up as a mummy today, got it.
And the game was a bit heavy-handed. So a lot of the dialogue is just kind of written in generalities. So here's a selection of quotes. It's getting so an honest man can't make a living. We are squeezed between unemployment and inflation. Some people don't see education as a way out anymore. That's why a lot of guys join gangs. They don't see no other way to get paid. Which...
Yeah, and the last scene in the game is almost literally a PSA.
It's, yeah.
So spoiler warning, I guess, for it's a short game, but spoilers anyway. Toward the end of the game, one of your friends is killed, is shot, and the last thing you do in the game is go to a memorial for him. But the memorial seems to be actually those the nonprofits we mentioned earlier, the real world ones, like pitching themselves to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, I've got no problem with the work they do. I've got no problem with a nonprofit doing good work being featured in a game. But narratively, it went beyond heavy-handed into weird and jarring and disjointed for me.
Yeah, we've criticized, I think, other social impact games for not having, a clear call to action.
Yeah.
But maybe this is a little bit too clear.
Yeah, this was...
It was presented as, a game that you buy on Steam and you download and you play and, it's its own game that you paid... I think I paid $20 for it.
Yeah, it was either 15 or 20, something like that.
So then to get this kind of, direct command to feel a certain way and donate to certain people, it just felt out of place, whereas maybe a lighter touch and a more artistic approach might have been welcome. And it kind of goes against so last episode, which seems like ages ago, we talked about embedded design, where you want to, put your message inconspicuously next to things that are just normal things that are not your message, and that makes it more likely for people to accept what you're saying. And here, you just got kind of clobbered.
Yeah, it's like the game comes to a screeching halt and is replaced by message.
Right. So, gang violence, people getting shot, all those difficulties, that's all fine. But then, yeah, I just felt like I was being told too much how to feel about it instead of seeing what was happening and being allowed to form my own opinions based on the experience.
Yeah. Well, just the cardinal sin that I think we both have realized in this game a little bit is that I think we were both pretty bored with it.
Yeah, I was about to say the exact same thing, that, yeah, a game can commit a lot of mistakes, but the worst mistake a game can ever make is, yeah, being boring.
Yeah, and admittedly, again, I was watching a video rather than playing it myself, but I honestly actually fell asleep in the middle of it at one point, so that's how much it was holding my attention.
Yeah, the dialogues just went on way too long, the choices were not interesting a lot of the times. One morning, my mother and sister were joking about how messy my room was, and okay, that's fine, but it went on for like 3 or 4 dialogue choices, and none of them were especially, engaging or had any effect on where the game was going, and it was rough. And then we walked to school, and my sister said how much she liked my poetry, and that was nice, but then I had to click through another 3 or 4 options to get through that. And, we mentioned the game would say so-and-so remember that at certain places, like in a Telltale game, but...
Yeah, word for word, like a Telltale game.
yeah, but I rarely got a sense that it actually mattered.
No, me neither. And also, time is treated oddly in the game. A full day at school might go by in a few minutes in a way that... But with no, scene transition in the middle of it. It's just, you go to your class for 3 minutes, and then you stand up and go home.
Yeah, it
just felt, again, weird, and there are other narrative ways to handle that kind of thing. No, I don't want to spend 8 hours sitting at a desk listening to a teacher in a game, but there's other ways to handle that.
Yeah, the camera pans to the clock or to a window, it fades out, or you have some type of cut, or you have an accelerator, we've all seen techniques for showing the passage of time, right? And
yeah, even beyond games, movies, TV, books... anything.
Yeah, and this, you sit down at 9 a.m. and you get up and suddenly it's 3 p.m. and that was strange. So beyond the dialogue and kind of the time aspect, I felt there wasn't much interesting to do in the environments when you did have
there
a
was nothing
to
do in the environments.
Yeah. So there were no scavenger hunts, there were no game objectives, there were no objects that revealed more about the characters. So I tried to think of, an example from another game that did this really well, and I was thinking of the life of I said The Life is Strange again. Why do I keep saying that? Anyway, so you're in one part of Life is Strange. You're wandering around a junkyard, and your immediate goal is to find bottles for target practice because your edgy friend who says hella all the time wants to.
Oh God! Oh God!
Wants to.
Forgotten all about that.
She procures a gun somehow for self-defense purposes, I think. I forget exactly why.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And you go to the junkyard, and you have to find bottles for target practice. So you're wandering around the junkyard, but while you're wandering around, you're also trying to find this list of photographs that are on your achievement list. So that's kind of fun. So you have a story objective, you have kind of an extrinsic objective with the photographs. But then as you're going through the junkyard, it also happens to be the secret hideout of your friend, where she would go to do secret things with this game's version of Laura Palmer, the mysterious girl who died before the game began. So you're looking for bottles, you're looking for photographs, you're finding out things about your friend and about this an enigmatic figure that the whole game is based on. And so there's so much going on in such, you know, a seemingly small, simple scene. And there was just not a whole lot of that ever going on in We Are Chicago, unfortunately.
Although, weirdly, you know, if we've said repeatedly, this is kind of a clone of the Telltale genre. I think recent Telltale games have also gotten worse at this also. I played the Batman Telltale game not too long ago, and there's virtually no side things like that to do. It's just objective to objective to objective without much interesting in the side. So not that that excuses the issues with We Are Chicago, but they're not the only ones having problems with it.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, thinking back on my own Telltale experience, those environments have been more empty than Life is Strange, although I didn't notice it ever as much, I think.
The at least the first couple seasons of the Walking Dead game from Telltale that I've played had much more to do, or at least you could choose the order to do things in, and it just felt a little more open than this.
Sure. So... All right, here's the part of the show where we workshop the game and we think of what could have been. Mm-hmm. So, what if when you go to the fast food place, what if you knew throughout the day that you had to buy a gift for your sister's birthday, which that's an actual event in the game, right? It's been a while since.
I think so. Yes, okay. Let's go with it.
All right, let's say that it is. And let's say the gifts that you can choose for your sister depend on how much money you have. So maybe you even had a choice at the beginning of the day to study for your test and not buy your sister a birthday present or a very small one, or go to work and make some money to buy your sister a birthday present. But if you go to work, you won't study for your exam and maybe you won't get into college, which is a continual threat that's mentioned throughout the game. Maybe your boss leaves the back room unlocked, so you have a chance to go back there and steal some cash to get your sister an even better birthday present. Maybe you go back there and you don't steal the cash, but you can read some post-it notes or files that indicate how your boss is struggling to make ends meet, and he doesn't want to make kids work overtime, but he has no choice. So now you get that excitement of voyeurism and transgressing something that's always, you know, engaging about these games, and you have something you're trying to accomplish instead of just trying to get to the next screen, and you're making actual choices that affect how the game progresses. And maybe your sister will react to the quality of the gift accordingly. Maybe she has it on display for the rest of the game. So if you elected to stay home and study for your test, your sister gets, I don't know, what's a horrible gift?
I don't know.
A sock. You buy your sister
there we go, one
a sock.
And in the wrong size.
You buy your sister an individual wrong sized sock because you are a horrible brother and wanted to study to get into college, and she displays it for the rest of the game, so it's a reminder of the choice that you made, you horrible person. So you know, I feel like that's when social impact games are the most successful, right? When the game mechanics and the story combine to push you to sincerely do something you would otherwise never consider doing, not just because you're idly curious to see what would happen, right? Mm-hmm. So this kind of gets at one theory of change management that was proposed by a guy named Kurt Lewin. He said the first step in changing is to be unfrozen from your existing mental state. And I think that's maybe one advantage these social impact games can give, is putting you in a position where you think, okay, maybe there's something not quite right with my existing interpretation of the world.
And I like a lot that scenario you've created as something the game could have done. And you also could have then gone further with it and tied it into some of the mechanics that do exist in the game. So, for example, when you have to count out change from the register, maybe you could shortchange someone and pocket the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And but are they going to notice? And is your boss going to find out? Like, there's all kinds of things then that, which might actually make having to make change for six people in a row, you know, interesting. Because there's a choice there each time that you have to do it.
Oh, well, that reminds me of, you know, our perennial favorite Papers, Please, right? Mm-hmm. Where you can do bad things at work to make more money for your family, basically.
I think we really just want every game to be Papers, Please. You know what? This game would be great if it had more document processing.
That's just an item on our rubric, right? Document processing, 1 to 5.
How many documents do you process in this game? Fail. But getting back into what you're talking about, I think that's one of the big misses of this game, is that it doesn't put you in that state of really having to make any of those choices. I mean, the main point of view character is almost a side story to what's going on around him. He's not the one who's contemplating joining a gang. It's pretty much assumed that he's going to college, I think. I mean, there's some question marks around it, but it's never really in jeopardy as to whether he's going to go or not. Would the game have been more impactful if you had the option to join a gang? Like, if you were put in that scenario where that was a solution to some of your problems? Because that's the experience that's foreign to me. I have been a high school student contemplating going to college. I have not been someone on the south side of Chicago who a legitimate, you know, choice for my future would be joining a gang because that solves a set of problems. That's what I really wanted to experience in this game and what I thought it could have done. And that's the situation that Aaron's two main friends in the game find themselves in. And I kept wishing that I was playing the game as one of them instead of the main character, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point. And I didn't even think about it until you mentioned it. But now that you have, it's so blindingly obvious that probably the better gameplay and story choice would have been to, yeah, give you the choice to join a gang instead of just watching it happen around you, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or, and, you know, build up that situation for why is that a plausible option for something you would do? Not just because, like you mentioned, not just because you want to see what happens when you join a gang, but because, you know, based on family dynamics and friends and school and all that, that is a solution to problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe as you see your chances for college shrinking because you mm-hmm. elected to go to work instead of study to buy your sister a gift, maybe as those chances get smaller and smaller, you know, the appeal of having a more definite chance at a well-being, you know,
yeah,
as incorrect as we know it is, you know, as that appears to be given to you by joining a gang, you know, that would probably help you understand the
And this is where
you know,
it's very
better.
Hard for me to talk about it without sounding condescending, I think, but that's because it's so foreign to me and that this is a world that I have never been part of, that I've never been adjacent to. And I really had hoped this game would genuinely put me in someone's shoes who experiences these things, mm-hmm. and it didn't. And when I thought that was the main selling point of all the press coverage I saw going into it, was that this puts you in the shoes of someone living real-life choices on the south side of Chicago, I didn't feel like it delivered on that.
Yeah, I have a similar feeling.
Yeah. But in the end, there's a special guest appearance by Neil deGrasse Tyson, so we'll
you mean,
go with that.
Just the poster of him?
Yeah, you know, that qualifies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, during the poetry slam. No, not that I saw in the video, but yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson's poster gazes at you as you deliver your poetry slam. For some reason,
New Game Plus, you get to play through as Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, I would totally play that. Which vest will you wear today?
The title, the title appears and Chicago gets crossed out and Neil deGrasse Tyson gets written in, right?
The first couple hours were just like a stealth lead into that, really.
To the real game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, overall, I think we agree that it was an ambitious game, and it's mm-hmm. great to see higher profile games like this exploring social issues. But I think the genre still has a way to go before it can stand with the other respected names in the industry, like Telltale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally salute what they were trying to do. You know, I feel like their hearts were in the right place, but it it just, and I, for that reason, I had a hard time getting myself in the mindset to critique this game. Because, like, I want to salute it. I want this to be a thing that doesn't otherwise exist. But maybe it's the first step that's necessary to get there for other games. I don't know, but it's not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is a first step, so we will end on that optimistic note. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Unlocking Games. I'm Brandon Carper.
I'm Chad Hafley.
And you can find us on the web at unlockinggames.com and on Twitter at unlockinggames. Thank you for listening, and until next time, it's your move.